This RFM podcast was brought to you with the support of New Zealand On Air.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Deep Sky Adventures.
In the universe.
Deep Sky.
Deep Sky Adventures.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari. Right, well, welcome to Y Space.
And here we are for another week of space and astronomy.
Yeah, well, lots of cool things happening, as always, in space. We saw Mars the other day, didn't we? Coming home quite early in the morning from stargazing. It was about 2 in the morning, and there was this beautiful Mars just sitting up about the northeast, just above the horizon, looking very reddish, as you would expect the red planet to look. It was quite nice. Haven't seen Mars for a while.
No, it's been behind the sun. And when is that? You can't really see it because you would have to look through the sun, which is impossible. So then everything that is on that part of the sky that we call the zodiacal band disappears from our view for a couple of months.
Well, so Mars has been in the sky for a while. It's just that we haven't gotten up really early to go and have a look at it.
Yeah.
So, in fact, you've been able to see Mars for quite some time. The best view, or the most convenient view of Mars, is coming up early in the new year. So around sort of February, March, Mars will be in a pretty good position and at a slightly more convenient time, unless you like getting up at sort of 2-3 in the morning, in which case, if that's your convenient time, then Mars is looking good now. But it'll be a little bigger in the sky as we get a wee bit closer to it.
And it was quite an amazing night because we saw Venus, and Venus looks spectacular. It's like a half of a disc.
Yeah,
this is what it looks like half moon, but tiny. Imagine like a teeny tiny half moon. Really, really bright. It's really bright in the western sky. So we saw that. And then Saturn is in the sky. And Saturn looks weird as well because the opening of the ring changes as Saturn goes around the sun. And so this year and next year, it will be almost side on. And so the ring of Saturn is very, very thin, but Saturn looks very, very squashed. And when you look in the telescope and you see, it's a very unusual Saturn to look at than the Saturn that we used to. When you look at Saturn, you see that big ring. And this thing that we're seeing is, as you see how squashed Saturn is, it's just absolutely incredible. And then, you know, Saturn is very famous because people say if you had a bathtub that is large enough to put Saturn in it, Saturn would float. Well, Saturn is also very squashed. So I think that beats the other one. It's way more interesting. And then we have Jupiter in the sky as well. And Jupiter is kind of like fallen out of the graces in the last few years because the great red spot that was so famous that everybody, I think every school we go to, we get this request from the kids to go and see the great red spot. Like, it's invariably, let's go and see the great red spot on Jupiter. Well, unfortunately, as of this year, the great red spot on Jupiter is actually smaller than the size of planet Earth. And a few years ago, it was 3 times the size of planet Earth. It was enormous. It was so big you could actually see it in the telescope. And now we've been squinting to,
yeah, it's hard to see.
Catch and see anything. I didn't see it in
I saw it last year. When they can, yeah. you got to have really good conditions now.
Last year, yeah. But it's getting smaller and smaller and smaller. So that's very, very interesting. So Jupiter is reverting to 2 bands right now. And then we've got Mars that is coming up really beautiful.
Mercury.
Well, yeah, Mercury as well.
But mind you, we've missed Mercury now. Mercury was visible a couple of weeks ago pretty well. So we did see it, well, more than a couple of weeks, about 3 weeks ago. So we've missed Mercury for a bit, but it'll reappear in the morning. So you don't have to wait very long for Mercury because it whizzes around the sun in 88 days. So chops and changes from being a morning visible planet to an evening visible planet. And
very fast. Yeah. So Mars is really red, and you look at it as it comes out from quite close to the northeastern part of the sky, and it's really orange.
Yeah, it does. It looks quite orange. In
Yeah.
fact, there would be. Oh, actually, no. I was trying to think that there would be a time at the moment, maybe about 1:30 in the morning. I think Saturn's still up. You'd be able to see Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune. They're quite hard to see though. You need a reasonable telescope for those. Mars and Jupiter. Yeah, it would all be in the sky.
Pretty cool.
Yeah.
So that's the night sky. And there should be a meteor shower. Now, here's the thing about meteor showers here in New Zealand. We don't really have good meteor showers.
Yeah, they don't
So
get very high,
they don't
do they?
get, yeah, and you don't have as many. So if you hear people excited about meteor showers, it is an exciting thing. Yes, in the Northern Hemisphere, yes, in August, yes. But it's kind of like it. And everything else is not the hype that we used to, but you know, this is the worst thing that we have here in the Southern Hemisphere. We don't have good meteor showers, but in other aspects, in other regards, the Southern Hemisphere is the best place on Earth to look at the night sky.
Yeah, and we talked about that quite a lot, the lack of the meteor showers here. But you still get them, and you'll still see more shooting stars. That's kind of how they look, right? When they're on, so you'll see a few more, but often lower to the horizon. But you need good conditions without the moon, all that stuff to see them. But the planets are looking good at the moment. It's quite nice to see that. It's almost like the planets are seasonal, eh? Well, at certain times of the year, there's not much up there. But this time of the year, for the last few years, we've had quite a few, which is
Yeah,
cool.
and as of the 8th of December, Jupiter was actually opposite the Sun. So it's a phenomenon we call opposition when Jupiter. So you can see Jupiter at midnight, right up in the sky, in the direction opposite to the Sun.
Yeah, which means it's the closest to us as well. So Jupiter looks ever so slightly bigger than it would normally. Now, Jupiter is a long way away, and we're whizzing around the sun fairly close. Jupiter's a long way away. So the difference between when Jupiter's sort of the furthest from us and the closest to us is not a whole lot, but it's significant enough that Jupiter looks a little bit bigger. Saturn, same deal. When Saturn's at opposition, it looks marginally bigger, but it's even further away. So that difference isn't a whole lot. The cool thing, of course, about Jupiter is its moons. It's got these four moons which are nice and visible, the Galilean moons, Io, Europa, Callisto, and Ganymede. And you often see them in different configurations around the planet. Sometimes they're in a line, two and two on either side of the planet. Sometimes there's four on one side, and sometimes there's one on one side and three on the other. In fact, the other night we saw Jupiter with one of the moons really, really close to Jupiter. There's a little tiny dot right next to Jupiter. And occasionally, in fact, every week, if you time it well, you'll be able to actually see an eclipse on Jupiter. They're pretty common. So you see a little black dot, which is the shadow of a moon moving across Jupiter. Any good conditions to see it, because if the sky is a bit lumpy, there's too much turbulence, then your view of Jupiter won't look the best. So you want pretty good conditions. So you're going to look for those. Yeah, stay up to about midnight when everything calms down a bit.
What else is in the sky? Well, we have this time of the year, Orion is climbing up, and you can see Orion, the Hyades, and the Pleiades. And as we talked before many times, this time of the year, when you look towards the star cluster of the Pleiades, it's not Matariki, it's something else, it's part of other asterism groups of stars. For European cultures, the Pleiades name is the Pleiades name all year round, doesn't matter where you are. And actually, every culture around the world who can see the sun and the moon can see the Pleiades. And every culture in the world has a name for this group of stars. And it's different things for everybody else. It's birds, it's girls, it's a bunch of warrior people, it's animals, all sorts of things. So it's really interesting how people link astronomy and observations with the cultural stuff that they're doing here on Earth. So they're really high and they're very, very beautiful, and you can see them towards the northern part of the sky.
And a good trick you can do at this time of the year is have a look at the Pleiades and see how many stars you can count. And see if you can. And you've got to be honest about it, so don't go making up stars that you can't really see. Try and count how many you can see. And if anyone tells you they see 11, they're not telling the truth.
I thought no, you said no peeking.
Yeah, well, no cheating.
No
Yeah,
cheating. All right,
so it's quite cool with Orion. Orion, well, if you know Orion's belts, he's three stars in a row, and it looks like a pot. So the handle of the pot, right in the middle of that, is Orion Nebula, and that's a beautiful little, well, big nebula, about 1,500 light years away. So it's a wee way away, and it looks absolutely amazing. Even in binoculars, you'll see that. Now, if you do look at it in a telescope, you'll see four little tiny stars right in the middle of it, or roughly in the middle of it. They're called the trapezium. Now, one of the favorite things that astronomers like to do is try and see if you can see actually six stars in the middle of it. Now, four of them are really bright, hence the trapezium, but sort of buried amongst them, actually just slightly on the outside of the little trapezium shape it makes, there's two little stars, very, very dim stars. And they're dim because they're buried in the dust cloud, but they're actually quite big stars. But from what we see, they look very, very dim. They're called the E and F stars, A, B, C, and D. I
ABCD.
know my alphabet. A, B, C, D. They're the bright stars. E and F are the dim ones. And astronomers name things like that. They just use the alphabet. Astronomers often get the alphabet in order, unlike a bee.
Normally they name alpha, beta, gamma, delta, which is why,
Well, they
yeah.
did. They used to. Now they don't. Now
But
they
these
use the
ones are
alphabet.
like.
Yeah. So it's because you need a telescope to see these. They started using the alphabet that we use more
Not the
often.
alphabet that the Greeks used.
Yeah. So it's L A B C D for the four bright ones and E and F for the little ones. So often you might hear astronomers talking about, oh, wow, getting all excited. They go, oh, I saw the E and F stars. Well, on pretty good conditions with a reasonable telescope, you'll pick up E and F stars. You do need something that collects a fair bit of light. They are very, very dim. And trying to distinguish them from those four bright stars can be a bit tricky, but in the right conditions, you can totally see them, which is quite good. You don't need a huge telescope. Just I think I've seen them in the 8-inch actually. So you don't need a giant telescope, just something that's reasonable size. The other cool thing to look at is so above Orion's belt. If you look at Orion in the evening, when the belt's kind of lined up with the horizon roughly, if you go up, you'll see quite a bright star a wee way up from the belt, and that's Rigel. Now, if you look at Rigel in a telescope, decent telescope again, right in close to that real bright star, you'll see this little tiny, tiny little dot tucked in there, another little star really, really close to it. And if you can see that, yeah, the conditions are pretty good as well. The challenge you have with that one, especially if you're using a Dobsonian or a reflecting telescope, if those telescopes, when you look at stars, they kind of look like a bit of a cross. So they have the sharp bit of the star, then you've got these spikes poking out of the star, and four of them. And what that is, they're diffraction spikes caused by the mechanics of the telescope. So the telescope, a reflecting telescope's got two mirrors, big giant one down the bottom of the telescope, and then a little tiny one up the top. And the little tiny one at the top is held by basically a cross-shaped metal construction. So quite thin pieces of metal holding this central mirror, secondary mirror. And so they cause these diffraction spikes in the star. So that's what gives them that little cross shape, those spikes poking out. Now, if your telescope is aligned in such a way, sometimes that little tiny dot will actually be buried in the diffraction spikes. So if you're using a refractor, you won't have that problem because they don't have diffraction spikes.
What if you have the Hubble Space Telescope? How many diffraction? No, what if you have the James Webb Telescope? How many diffraction spikes are there?
Well, it's eight, isn't it?
Eight,
Yeah.
yeah.
Eight diffraction spikes. But then you'd be able to look at that star and, well, in fact, you wouldn't be looking at that star with James Webb. It'd just be too bright.
So you can tell which telescope or which type of telescope was used when taking pictures by counting the number of diffraction spikes that you see coming from stars. Also, coming on to the Milky Way, basically we're going on to the Milky Way. So we're starting from the Pleiades, then there's the Hyades, which is the actually closest star cluster to us, to here, to Earth. And then we have Orion's belt with the pod. And Rigel on top. And then a few hours later, when the Milky Way gets a bit higher up, we can see exactly opposite Rigel and opposite the belt of Orion. You see a red giant star, Betelgeuse, and you can totally see those stars, especially if the sky is a bit hazy, you can see the colors, which is what I love. Is the only good thing about having not so good seeing. is actually you can see the colors of the stars, and
They do
it's
show up a bit better, yeah.
especially for astrophotography, people pay a lot of money to buy these diffusion filters, and they're pretty cool because you can get like really cool effects when you take pictures of the stars. But when the sky is a little bit hazy, you get the same effect that you get from a diffusion filter or just naturally. Because so for example, last week the sky was so good that you could see the entire Barnard Loop on a photograph that was 13 seconds exposure, and you could totally see that
And
rate.
that's a loop of gas. It kind of looks like it's roughly going from, well, Rigel to Betelgeuse in this big loop on one side of Orion, kind of around the belt. It's gas. It's hydrogen gas that appears red. So we see it in the near infrared. So if you've got a camera that responds quite well to that part of the spectrum down in the red, you can pick it up. So if you had a camera that's been modified with its infrared filter removed, you might be able to pick it up.
But not too often. So
Yeah,
I've
you need
been
really good conditions, not good.
photograph. Yeah, no, the exact conditions. But I've been photographing that part of the sky for a long time with the specially modified camera that we have, which is a Canon RAW. But that was one of the very few times when the sky was a bit hazy when I actually saw that Barnard's Loop in a 13 seconds exposure, which was brilliant. So that's pretty cool. And you can do artistic stuff sometimes, and you can do science stuff as well, and you can see how things work and how the sky is so beautifully painted by nature into all these galaxies and things. So coming onto the galaxy, going onto the galaxy, continuing our journey, we see the brightest star in the sky, Sirius, and you can't miss that one. It's like really, really, really bright. It's almost in the Milky Way, and that's part of the dog. And with the dog, you have another really beautiful star that is a double star, not like Rigel, which is a big one and a tiny one, adjacent tiny one. But you see, this star that we're talking about is a blue and a red giant. They're a blue and a red giant together,
It's 145 Canis Majoris.
and or is also known as the Saturn albedo, because
That's because
the
no one remembers
original
145 Canis.
albedo is a star in a constellation called the Northern Cross. And so you've got is an asterism, and so you've got this really, really cool star albedo there, and then you've got the Saturn albedo in here, and so that's a really cool star, and there's a star cluster there nearby as well. But then talking about north and south and comparison, as you go along the Milky Way, you see the False Cross, and then you see the Diamond Cross, and then you see the Saturn Cross, obviously. But with the Diamond Cross, there's a bunch of stars that we call the Saturn Pleiades, and just like the Saturn albedo, this is a bunch of stars that is the doppelganger, the twin kind of like star cluster with the Pleiades.
It's because they ran out of names, and they weren't very imaginative. So they would name it had all these names for the Northern Hemisphere objects. So when they jumped in their sailing boats and came down to the Southern Hemisphere, of course, ignoring that the fact that most of these things had names anyway by the people that already lived here, they just renamed them after Northern Hemisphere objects.
Yeah, so for example, the Northern Cross, which is an asterism, as I was just saying,
Oh, Southern Cross.
well, it's the
There you
Southern
go.
Cross, right. So, but the Northern Cross, the real name of the constellation is Cygnus. This is where Albedo is, and Deneb as well. But then you have Deneb Kaitos here in the Southern Hemisphere. So you've got all these mirror images and things. And of course, this is for the European kind of like cultural astronomy, but everybody around the world who saw the stars have their names, their own names for things, and they might have had different ideas and opinions on how to name things in the night sky in their own countries.
I don't want to be disparaging of the human input into astronomy, but we're very late to the party. We've only been around 300,000-ish years of human occupation on this planet. The stars have been around considerably longer.
How long?
Now, well, the universe has been around an awfully long time, nearly 14 billion years. Even 300,000 years ago, the sky would have looked a bit different. So, the human interpretation of the sky is It's like everything, right? Humans, we like to think we're the center of the story. Actually, when it comes to the universe, we totally aren't. We're late to the party. Most of the universe has already done its thing. The universe is going to be around a lot longer after we've disappeared. In fact, a long, lot longer after our planet has disappeared. Well, our planet won't actually disappear, but the bit that we can live on will. The nice solid outer crust. We do have this tendency to put ourselves at the center of it. Well, and we did. We used to think that everything orbited around the Earth, and everyone was very shocked when they found out that, well, wow, things didn't orbit the Earth, only the moon did. And that was a bit shocking. In fact, so shocking, a few people got burned at the stake for it. It wasn't their fault. And of course, the universe just simply didn't notice because that was happening anyway. But there is some cool. So the naming of objects is a challenging one, because everybody gives them different names. What astronomers tend to do now is use catalog numbers. So we'll have a series of catalogs that have a number, and if you want to tell an astronomer about a particular object, you mention the catalog and the number, and then that astronomer, if they don't know it off the top of their head, they can go and look it up, so they know exactly where that object will be and a little bit of attributes about it. So that's the way astronomers talk about things in the night sky. We don't actually talk about constellations so much, other than to say, well,
The
that's a...
newspapers talk about constellations.
well, we're so astronomers don't talk about them because they don't really mean a whole lot. The constellations themselves, the stars that make them up, they're all at different distances anyway. So it's only from Earth they all look kind of the same and make a picture. But the only time you do references them is if you're referring to a part of the sky and you want people to know which bit of the sky you're referring to. You can use coordinates, but most people, of course, are not familiar with those coordinates. Much the same as people are not familiar with your latitude or your longitude. You don't say, "Oh, I'm heading down to 41 degrees south today." People have no idea what you're talking about in general, but they can go and look it up on a map. So it's not like it's hidden knowledge. You've got to do a bit of work to go and find it. It's interesting with the sky. What you can unlock with a telescope, of course, is the really cool stuff. So you've got this layer first, which the human eye sees, which we've given it a lot of names and stories and so on. We've labored on that layer for tens of thousands of years. Well, the advent of the telescope gave us the opportunity to see beyond that layer and out deeper into stuff that you can't see just with your eye. And that's really the realm which we love playing in, because the powerful telescopes, you can see well into that layer. You can see these features on planets. You can see these incredible stars. You can see these amazing clusters of stars, these nebula, these big gas clouds that form stars, these really incredible sights, these super distant objects like very occasionally a supernova. You can see the star dying. You can see remnants of stars that have died thousands of years ago. In fact, the other night we were looking at Crab Nebula, or M1, as it's known as. That's the catalogue, it's the Messier catalogue, and it's number one in the Messier catalogue. So, other astronomers know what you're talking about. And that was a star that blew up a long time ago, nearly 1,000 years ago. So we can see this, that gas is expanding from when that cloud blew up, which is pretty cool.
So the sky is full of wonders every night, and every night we go stargazing, and every day we talk about stars. We always think of this process of how we literally ended up being here on Earth, made of stardust that was made in stars. And I think this is an extraordinary thought to close this conversation with. And we hope that you enjoyed hearing about what's in the night sky, and we hope to see you looking at the night sky. Look up and see all of these amazing things that are there, and remember, we are made of stars.
Yeah.
And until next time, Harry and Sam, wish you clear skies.
See you.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Deep Sky Adventures.
In the universe.
Deep Sky.
Deep Sky Adventures.
Star Safari.
Star Safari.
Star Safari. Star Safari.